In 1984, in the middle of the Reagan administration, the NLRB, then with a Republican majority, narrowed the factors used to define what is known as joint employment. Last week, the NLRB reversed its 1984 policy. Waste and recycling company Browning Ferris contracted with staffing company Leadpoint Business Services to supply workers to remove waste from conveyor belts of recyclable materials. Browning Ferris said it should not be part of collective bargaining over wages, benefits, and working conditions because the employees work for Leadpoint. The NLRB disagreed. Matt Bode is a professor of business and employment law at St. Louis University School of Law. He says the NLRB looks at about 10 factors to define an employer, with the primary test being how much control a company has over workers.
Do you basically have the ability to tell these workers what to do, and do you set their terms and conditions of employment? Meaning you tell them what they're going to get for doing their work and you're telling them how to do their work.
Prior to 1984, the rule had long been that a company possessing the authority to set terms and conditions of employment, whether it used that control or not, was sufficient to determine joint employer status. In 1984, the board, under its Republican majority, said that not only did a company have to possess the authority, it must exercise that control and do so directly rather than indirectly through another company. The board, with a Democratic majority, has gone back to the standard that says a company no longer needs to exercise its authority over workers directly, but it can be found to be a joint employer by exercising its authority indirectly. In other words, Browning Ferris is a joint employer and must participate in collective bargaining in part because it exercised its control over workers through instructions to Leadpoint's on-site managers. Ross Eisenbray is vice president of the Economic Policy Institute, a pro-labor organization in Washington. He says the 1984 decision was aimed at helping businesses avoid responsibility for wages, working conditions, and paying such things as unemployment taxes. He says employees will benefit from the decision.
It's all an attempt by employers to reduce their labor costs and to make it harder for employees to get wage increases or to improve their working conditions.
Dan Meehan, president and CEO of the Missouri Chamber of Commerce, says employers need the flexibility of working with staffing companies. He says this decision will hurt workers because it increases uncertainty and liability for businesses.
They've just reversed 30 years of law that will crimp our ability to create jobs and maintain them moving into the future.
The NLRB has another case looking at the work situation of employees, this one involving fast food giant McDonald's. Missouri Republican Senator Roy Blunt says he's concerned that Browning Ferris may be just the first step toward redefining employee relations between franchises and their national headquarters.
Everybody appears to believe that what this ruling does is really set the stage for some linkage that has not ever been there before between local employees and the person who happens to run the national advertising.
Law professor Bode previously served as a field attorney for the NLRB. He says Blunt and business groups may have reason for concern with the board's new standard on indirect control.
Those relationships will certainly have much more scrutiny placed upon them by the board, and the board will look much more particularly about what exactly it is that the franchisor is asking of the franchisee.
For his part, Blunt is not waiting to find out. As chairman of the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on Labor, Health, and Human Services, he's introduced language to keep the NLRB from using federal funds to implement its most recent decision. In Washington, I'm Jim Howard, St. Louis Public Radio.